Okay, so this chapter that we're talking about, chapter 5, and then the beginning of chapter 6, is a lot about judgment and punishment. And it's a little bit of a continuation from last week. But, so one of my favorite things to do, like when I'm preparing for these talks, is to listen to sermons from my favorite pastors. And it was so hard to find a sermon that had anything to do with Hosea chapter 5. Like, there's a lot of sermons, like, at the beginning of Hosea and then at the end. But this, like, chunk that we're walking through right now, there's not a whole lot. So I don't have any cool quotes that I want to, like, share with you. And just kind of echoing what Lisa said last week, that it's hard and the scripture is tricky and it's challenging. And I just kind of think of it like we're not, like, sipping this, like, glass of wine. We're just, like, shooting whiskey. Like, it's just, like, a gut punch the way that Hosea is talking to the people of Israel. And just trying to wake them up from this, like, idolatrous slumber that they're in. So the language is weird and it's hard. Just the words of, like, whoredom and harlotry. But they really give us a vivid picture of what our hearts actually look like. And it's uncomfortable, but it's worth wrestling with. And in especially in this chapter, we see Israel's waywardness. And if we look closely, we also see ourselves. We see our own hearts. And, but we also see our God, who is fully just and who is still wanting his people to return, even though they're filthy and they're covered in their sin. He's still longing for his people to come back. I kind of just want to start from, like, the context of Hosea, just going back to where we're at in the time of Israel, because if you don't start there, then it's still really heavy, but it's helpful to understand that it's not a good time in Israel's history. And if we're just reading this and you hear a lot about God's judgment, we're not understanding the, like, how just it is. We're just kind of seeing the harshness of it, but that he, even in this chapter, he has purpose in his punishment, in that it's not this kind of, like, reactive anger where he's just so angry with us and he's just lashing out, in the sense like my anger is when I'm angry at our son. His anger is purposeful and it's used for correction, and it's because he doesn't want us to just live a life of idolatry, that he wants us to feel the punishment and the correction so that we'll come back to him. So he's kind of letting us, or letting Israel in this passage, like, into the darkness so that they'll come back to him. So this time in Israel's history, Hosea is mostly talking about the northern kingdom. He does talk about Judah a little bit, but the northern kingdom, during this, like, 30-year period of Hosea, went through 6 different kings, and most of them killed the previous one in order to become king. So it's just a really, unstable time in Israel, and there's not good leadership. And all this is happening, and Assyria is just gaining power. So there's, like, this looming threat of Assyria conquering Israel and taking the land and kind of sending them into exile again, which is what they're most afraid of. And at the end of Hosea comes really close to the end of the fall of the northern kingdom, so the fall of Israel. So it's not a good time, and it's not a good time for leadership. And if we look at the structure of the passage that we're looking at, the ESV Study Bible outlined it really nicely in, like, 2 nice little categories. And the first part was it was called Idolatry in High Places. So it's chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. And it's mainly focusing, like, the address is mainly for the priest. Because God's talking about, there are points when he's talking about, or through Hosea, talking about the sins of Israel. But he's basically saying, the priests have led you astray. They have allowed this to happen. And there's a big consequence for the priests not doing what they're supposed to do. In fact, they're doing the opposite. They're leading God's people astray instead of telling them about God so that they would know God. And then at the end, we do get this glimpse of redemption and return. So there's this appeal to return and be raised in verses 15 of chapter 5 and then the first three verses in chapter 6. So I just want to, like, expound on those themes a little bit, and then I'll tell a story so it's not all text. But firstly, the priest failing, and we see in the first kind of section, the first, like, 1 through 7 is a lot about what the priests have failed to do. And Hosea uses this term that they're, like, snares and traps for the people of Israel. And at these places that have significance in Israel's past, so Mizpah and Tabor, and it's places where people are going, like, the people of Israel are going, and they think that they're worshiping God, but it's become mixed with these pagan temples and rituals. And so, and the priests have just allowed this to happen. And so that's, it's kind of this idea of, like, the commentary talked about, like, the nets were used for birds so that they don't know any better. And this is where they're being led, and the priests are ensnaring them. They're almost, like, causing them to be a part of this pagan worship. And then it also, if you go down to verse 2, it talks about, there's a reference there to child sacrifices, kind of what Lisa talked a little bit about that last week, and how that's just become an acceptable practice in Israel. And the chief kind of sins that Hosea points out for the people of Israel, and mainly the priest, is this idea of their self-reliance. So their pride, it's the idea that they are not dependent on God, and they're not turning to him. And we see that later in the way that they turn to other things and not God. So then it kind of also goes into God's judgment and his promised discipline to Israel because of the idolatry that's existing. There's this verse in verse 3, if you want to look at that, where God's kind of saying, like, I know you, Ephraim, I know you, Israel. And the commentary put it just a little bit different. It said, I myself know you, Ephraim, and you, Israel, are not hidden from me. For now you have played the harlot, Ephraim. You, Israel, are defiled. So this idea of God is saying, I still know you. That you think that you're hiding and you're able to kind of mix in these pagan practices. But I fully know you. That even in our worst, God intimately knows us, and we're not, like, we're not able to get away from that. But it's coming from a father, from a loving father that wants to know his wayward child, or in the book of Hosea, like, a wayward wife that has gone off. In the chapter also talks about that God will withdraw from his people. So it's not necessarily that he was ever present, like, at these pagan temples, but that he's saying he's withdrawing from the worshipers, those who are worshiping idols, and that he won't be present with them. And then the verse 7 goes on to say that he'll send desolation upon Israel, and he'll take away the blessings that he's given to them. So the reference to the new moon is kind of, it's supposed to be like the celebration of beginnings, but God is saying that even that will be disastrous for you. So then it goes on to be more judgment. But there's a shift in verse 8 where he's shifting to kind of more battle terms, like sounding the alarm. And it's talking more, like Hosea is talking more about the judgment that's coming for Israel and Judah. And we can see that also in there's a switch to imperatives where he's saying, blow the horn and sound the alarm. So there's kind of like this jolt of, before it was a little more, there's some more legal terms kind of, so it's like accusations against Israel, and now he's switching into these battle terms. And this is, in this section, it's where we see Israel running to Assyria, running to other things in their sickness and in their weakness, instead of running to God, that they're not only worshiping idols, but they're also trying to align themselves with these foreign powers because they're afraid that these powers are going to destroy them and dominate them, which is kind of what happens anyways. But they're sort of like looking out for themselves and not trying to rely on God. And so then there's these intense verses where God talks about, because of the corruption and war, the Lord will cause them to rot as if diseased, and he will tear them beyond repair. So there's also this shift in language too, where God is saying I, so it's very certain and clear that he is in charge, and he is in charge of judgment and justice, and that he wants Israel to hear this, and he wants them to be shaken, kind of out of the, just the, like, clouded sin that they're in, where they can't really see him and his goodness. So I have this story, about my sister that I wanted to share with y'all, and I'm probably gonna cry, but, so my sister, when I was a freshman in college, I'll start at the beginning. When I was a freshman in college, my mom got this call from the emergency room in a hospital in Philadelphia, and it was my sister. And she was living in Philly at the time and going to school there, but she had admitted herself to the emergency room because she knew that something was really wrong. She, for the past month, she had been slowly starving herself and, sorry, I didn't mean to, like, get choked up right now, but she could, like, barely bring herself to eat anything, and she was like, I know that this isn't normal, and I need help. So, my sister was living in this sickness, like, this disease, and her mind was really warped by it. And as a mom, like as a parent, I cannot imagine what that call was like and how terrifying it was. And so anyways, my parents went up there and they brought my sister home. Eventually, like, she had to go through inpatient, and then they brought her home, and she's still like going through recovery. But it was like this like really hard tension for my parents, of my sister was still very much like working through this disease and illness, and she said a lot of hurtful things to my parents, of kind of like, I really think you were a big part in like causing this, and if my parents, who were like, you know, like paying for everything and like providing a stable place for her and a safe place, and it wasn't just that, it was that when she was in Philly, like, she had these terrible friends that they didn't care for her, and she felt so lonely, and it was like, that was part of what contributed to driving her into these behaviors. And so just like lots of really hard, tricky things. And she kind of, when she came home, she kind of started pushing away from my parents. And, but there was this moment with my sister and my dad, that they were just in the kitchen one day and talking and telling jokes and like laughing with each other. So it had just been a while before, like since that had happened, because part of the disease was that my sister was like really bitter and angry and, just didn't like, she wasn't happy. And so when this little moment happened and my dad turned to my sister and he said, "That's my Heidi." So that's my sister's name. And so he was just saying like, "I see you and I know you and you're my daughter." And that is like what I think God is saying to Israel, like even in the midst of their sin and disease and their sickness, he is still saying, "I know who you are and you're mine." And he's reminding them like where they belong. And my sister actually told her therapist later that like my dad saying that to her was a really big part of, or just like really helpful in her recovery. And that it just reminded her of who she was and like that she did have a place where she belonged. So I just, and I think because of like how grueling and painful eating disorders can be in like the recovery process, that it's kind of a good analogy for just being swamped in idolatry, because it is so painful when God is like ripping us out of that, and because it's warped like so much of our life. And so, and to just view God like in these punishments and these harsh words that he's saying, he's doing it because he longs for his people to be healthy again, like he longs for them to be thriving again. And it was the same, just like similarities in the way that my parents were just like longing for my sister to get better. So that's kind of the, in some ways this passage is like special because it ends with like this hopeful note of when we look at chapter 5 verses 15 and then the first three verses of chapter 6, where God is talking about returning and being raised, and that verse 2 of chapter 6, when he says on the third day he will raise us up, it does like point you to Jesus, because that language is so familiar, and so it's pointing us to the one that, to the Messiah, that is able to cleanse, and he is able to restore God's people to himself. And so even though this book of Hosea is painful, because in this passage, like, it doesn't really say like, "Oh, okay, so then Israel like came back and they loved God again," and it's like, no, like we're gonna get a lot more judgment and punishment, it's still coming, but that it does help give us this longing of like the Messiah that does fulfill all of these scriptures, and that we get to live on this side. And though it's good to be reminded of the judgment that could await us, it's also so sweet to see just the way that God has orchestrated over time for us to be able to see his faithfulness and his goodness to his people, and that we get to live in a time when we know we are united to him forever. And that doesn't change based on our hearts, that is secure in Jesus, and we are secure in him. So that's kind of all I have for you guys. I hope you have a good study. Yeah.